Okay, over to you, Duane.
Greetings. I would like to thank the Moya University for the opportunity to participate in this presentation, with special thanks to Michael, BL, and Rose for their technical assistance, and of course, all of you who have taken time from your busy schedules to be a part of this presentation. Now, we made a decision at our last presentation to sort of shorten a number of the quotes and occult minutiae and allow for more questions. So we will be implementing that. Now, as we start, there's going to be a little recapitulation and repetition so that we can sort of ease into this new presentation, but bring any first-timers sort of up to speed. So thank you all, and let us move forward. We've gone through this quote every time I've made a presentation, and I'm not going to do it. It's in its entirety, but let's just say, jumping to the bottom of the quote that's in red, where DK says, "Until they are finally superseded next century by a newer and more adequate teaching." And I like to ask everyone how they would interpret that quote. And as I've shared, to me, a part of it would not simply be new and dynamic information, which is important, but how it's presented using tabulations, colored graphs, and most importantly, when we get into some of the real esoteric work, animations. Okay, now we sort of left off talking about plasma and the new electrical theories of the universe. And we're going to present an image that really gives a contemporary view of the idea of plasma and how that it links sort of everything in the universe, particularly on hidden levels. What links all suns, galaxies, and diverse star systems is what you're looking at right here. This is sort of an infrared ultraviolet picture of plasma with its electrical and magnetic tendrils connecting everything in the cosmos. The brighter points on this image are either suns or clusters of suns. It reminds me of a quote by H.P. Blavatsky in her Momentous Isis Unveiled, where she said, "By the radiant light of the universal magnetic ocean, whose electric waves bind the cosmos together, and their ceaseless motion penetrate every atom and molecule of the boundless creation." In this next image, we hear and see a description by DK of the similar macrocosmic outline. And this can be applied equally to our tiny microcosm, but it really relates to a planetary logos, a solar or cosmic logos. Quote, energy is a life fluid circulating throughout the entire body of the logos and vivifying, therefore, even the tiniest atom in that whole. It is valuable to endeavor to grasp the picture and to vision the wonder of what is transpiring. Now, granted that you have to be somewhat clairaudient and clairvoyant to truly not just view, but fully participate in this wonder that HPB and DK are referring to, but we're going to, in small and perhaps inadequate way, show how the rays in the planes, A, are constructed, and then a little later, how the rays in the planes might look animated. And here we see the seven planes rotating east to west, and the seven rays rotating from north to south. Keep in mind that the rays in the planes are spherical, and when a plane sphere passes through a ray sphere, this is when you have initiation. This is when growth and expansion takes place. Now to the next image. This is showing the same outline as we just viewed, only in a little more detail. You have the rays on the left, you have the planes on the right, and they are given electrical properties, or they have electrical charge. The rays are all positive, and the planes are all negative or receptive. And it's the interaction of the rays and planes that cause all evolutionary growth, whether going up the hierarchical ladder of energies or descending. Now, if you look at the rays in the planes a little closer, you'll note that although there is this main polarity of the rays and planes, positive and negative, when you take the seven rays as an example and take them separately, you'll see that ray one is positive, ray two is negative, ray three is positive, four negative, etc. And it sort of defines what we generalize by the masculine rays, the feminine rays, the 1, 3, 5, 7, the 2, 4, 6. But they can be broken down into polarities. So what you're looking at is a secondary electrical polarity in an overriding positive negative. And what I've just shared, and I appreciate your patience because this is a little technical, but with the planes, you have the same thing. And so when the rays and planes interact, as we're going to demonstrate shortly, they maintain their own identity, but at the same time, they fuse and blend in very curious visual ways. Okay, now here's another demonstration of the rays and planes. Only, according to the Tibetan, the rays in the planes are circular. They are spherical, and a sphere can be populated with any of the seven rays, and the planes can be populated with any of the seven planes. But again, for evolution and initiation to move forward, they have to come together. And all evolution is this dance between the positive rays and the receptive or negative planes. And when we get into the chakra system and triangles, we'll see this working out in very practical ways. On the next image, we can see sort of a more spherical representation. The rays on the left, the planes on the right. And this is a quote from Dina too, where the Tibetan, referring to the all-seeing eye of Shambhala, says, "It is a world of pure energy, of light and directed force. It can be seen as streams and centers of force, all forming a pattern of consummate beauty." Again, we may not all possess clairvoyance and clairaudience in its higher form, but it's impossible to be an advanced meditator without having flashes, without either seeing visions or moving into colors and notes, because all these seven rays and seven planes also have their unique notes. And part of the newer Aquarian, what I call, for a lack of better word, superhuman physics, will assist the disciple and what DK has outlined as their personality. It's three rays with their three unique notes, coloring the soul note with this unique color and sound, and then eventually the monadic note with its unique sound. So, for all of you who have paid your dues and you've been through the six stages of building the Antahkarana, when you get to the third stage, intention, visualization, and projection, where you're using the will, you drive the personality ray with its color and note and the soul note up into the upper triad or the one monadic life, building what DK calls rainbow bridges, which are technically of one or other of the rainbow colors. Okay, so now before we get into the actual animation, let me just say this. What you're going to see, and I apologize for the repetition, but this next animation is pure revelatory because it's going to show you visually how the rays rotating from right to left in the planes from left to right, when they come together, they create the most exquisite petal formations that you don't see at one time, but you will see at another time. In other words, DK says that the chakras that we have been taught to study and understand are really vortices. And these vortices are in motion because the rays and planes are coming together and they can't cancel each other out. And so what they do is they do this exquisite dance. And what you're going to see in this next animation is the petal formation that is formed as the rays and planes come together. And then we'll discuss it and we'll have questions. So take a deep breath and use this as a meditation. Now, before we have any questions, I just want to make this one comment that the most esoteric truth, according to the Tibetan master Dzogchen Khul, is that all is energy and energy is in motion. But the question I ask my esteemed viewer is, how do we, creatures of form, enter into those streams without some type of assist? And that's what a symbol is. A symbol, like the one that you're viewing right now, is it's like a still picture of energy that really was and is in motion all the time. So to consider the idea that all the chakras and the four centers that we study and meditate on, which is an important and preparatory stage, will eventually come alive and you'll enter into energy that's rotating, energy that's organic and in motion. So, excellent. Are there any questions?
I don't see any yet.
This is what a lot of the Eastern mystics call the dance. When you enter into the stream, another beautiful metaphor, you can also enter into a whole new dance. Okay, any
All right.
questions?
We have a comment here, and I'm not sure who it's from, but anyway, it says, talk of the dark center.
If Rose, you could regress just slightly, don't regress. We'll get out of our protocol here, and that's one of my glamours. I like to jump around too much. The dark center is Fohat, and it's like the center of a black hole. It's pure being, pure nothingness. And okay, this is a good demonstration right here. See that black dot? That's in the very center where the rays and the planes cross over. You have seven disks and they're black dots. That symbolizes Fohat. Every ray and plane has a point of pure abstraction. And when you study Fohat, you realize Fohat has seven sons, or if you prefer, seven daughters. And they are the essential point, as Michael Robbins would say, as pure being, and everything emerges out of them. So it's the know-nothing, it's the unborn, the uncreated, in Buddhism, the Laya point, the Bindu point of all major religions and esoteric traditions. Great question, because you're going to see that black dot in the majority of my presentations with animations and symbols. Okay, are there any other? It
Right.
doesn't have to be a
Yeah.
question, it can be a comment.
Yeah. We have a couple of other comments, but first, Barbara has her hand up. Go ahead, please, Barbara. Barbara,
Yeah,
you're.
it's in some of the sacred geometry. It is said that the rays participate more in geometry than do the planes, that the planes seem to be more of a diffusive energy. So I'm wondering if the on the Buddhic plane, for example, there can be just diffuse Buddhic energy, or there can be a Buddhic body that seems to be formed more by the rays.
Well, that is a very important statement, and I agree with it, that the rays and planes, you have to consider the subplane. Can you, Rose, go back to the overall. Okay, go to number 11. Now, this image is very powerful because it shows the seven rays as a spherical composite. And you see the monad coming from the cosmic astral or coming from the cosmic mental plane. It comes down, and it's from that monadic level all the other sheaths are created. But if you look at it carefully, you'll notice that at the higher rays, they're more organic. And as they come down, and every ray is represented there with its color. First ray red, second ray blue, three ray green, fourth ray yellow, etc. Can you see the triangles beginning to form where the violet is? And there is what is called, well, what I have called, let's be clear, occult cooling, that these energies can be like rivers of fiery light, but as they cool, as they are stepped down to lower subplanes, they begin to take on the geometric forms that we understand as sacred geometry. Every ray in every plane has its sacred geometry built into it, and it depends on what level you're operating. So that was a terrific question. Thank you.
Okay, then
any
we
other
have
comments?
Some other comment. Yes. Maria says, was the energies of the animation responding to the music? It seemed so.
There is in music and in visual animation what is called aliasing, and there are other words that may be more appropriate, but what it is that the human mind, looking out through its eyes in an ocular way, it can only assimilate so many frames per second. And what happens is when you have rhythmic music added to animations, what happens is the human mind begins to interpret what it thinks it sees. It begins to superimpose subjectively over the actual image additional sensations or impressions. And this is a perfect example of how invocative, not just a still symbol, which can be very powerful and have been used for thousands of years historically, but an animated symbol. The synchronization is true, but I would add the synchronization is also in your perceptions of this, because there's a mathematics to this that we won't cover because it's way too obscure and it's actually way beyond my pay grade. But that is an excellent question. Thank you.
And then Diana says, how could the dance during the initiatory ceremony of the road, ceremony of the road application?
Could that be rephrased slightly? It cut out on me.
Okay, yeah, I'm sorry. I think I'm having internet issues. But Diana, I'm not sure I understand. Can you clarify your comment here? It's how could be the dance during the initiatory ceremony of the road application?
Well, this is the dance. Or perhaps more accurately, it is a reflection of the dance. And it's not for nothing that Sufis in the more esoteric part of their orders, it's all rhythm and movement, and they can go into ecstasy simply by certain rhythmic motions. In other words, we're working with color and sound, but there is a whole area of mudra and advanced motions of the body that, when in sync with these inner movements, they become like a mirror. And it is the road, to me, when you study the rules of the road through color and sound and animation, you find it expands exponentially what the Tibetan is trying to communicate. And by his own admission says, words are so inadequate, but we have nothing else at our disposal to use. But when he made that statement, and Alice made that statement, it was entirely correct. But now, through the use of advanced holograms and fractals and animations, yes, they are not the thing in itself, but they're the next stage towards that. If second-rate people can see an image, they can duplicate it on the high mental plane. And that, of course, is where all the real magic takes place. What we're doing here is trying to impress your sensitive bodies with images that are in motion, but it requires each observer to take it on to the high mental plane before the real magic kicks in. But many people looking at this image can do it at the same time. In other words, I shouldn't be saying when they take it, they may be taking it to the mental plane right now. So I apologize for that oversight. Any additional comments?
Yes. James says, does DK say whether energy and matter are the same thing, just vibrating at different rates, matter at a slower, lower rate?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we have to learn to see what we have always been taught is inanimate, fixed, and stable. And this is why we always inject in these presentations the new work in the quantum sciences, because they demonstrate without the shadow of a doubt that we live in a quantum soup and nothing is real. It's all an illusion. My voice, what you're looking at. But the question is, how do you interface the elusive ego or the little self with ultimate reality without intermediary steps, or what I like to refer to as Jacob's ladder? Yes, excellent. Thank you.
Okay, Joe, I see your hand, but hold on just 1 minute. I've got one more comment from Francis. He says, is the dot the total everything and the total nothing on all planes all at once?
Yes. And this is where Michael Robbins and I used to have hourly debates on how do you describe the indescribable. And Michael, I love him, and he is so far beyond my pay grade on many levels. He used to try, he in my opinion, and he would acknowledge this, you can only allude to that. But that man with his Aries and with his first ray, he was so persistent, and year after year, to the benefit of all those who participated in his beautiful programs, especially around pure being and the principle of directed purpose, that's all you can do is allude to it. And that's really all you can do in any of the teachings when it comes down to it. Nobody can give you enlightenment. But as HBB said, the masters give us seven keys, but those keys have to be turned seven times. And only the disciple can turn them. Thank you, Francis. Excellent.
Okay, Joe, go ahead. I see your hand up. Joe?
She might be
Joe
able
Garso.
To. She might be able to hear us, but for some reason doesn't have the auditory. So let's just take another comment and Joe can jump in right after that.
She's the last one.
Oh, okay. I know, Joe, it's going to be a good comment.
Well, right. She must have stepped away.
Okay.
Well, there we go. There we go.
Yeah, I couldn't unmute myself. Complicated because I'm trying to pull four things together. That black dot, the Sushumna, Fohat, and I'll stop there because you get the idea, I think. I'm seeing that channel going up the center of that one image and thinking that has to have something to do with the Sushumna.
Absolutely. The three channels, the Ida, the Pingala, and the central Sushumna, are very important, and we will discuss that in a little more detail shortly when we get into the minor, when we get into the centers. And at the third, this actually begins at the first and second initiation, but it's not always conscious by the disciple until the third initiation, where that subterranean power of the Shakti, the mother principle, is raised up through all of the other centers and then climaxes at the thousand petal lotus or the crown center. And I have no doubt there are many people in this group who have had Kundalini experiences. And although it's not usually an area of focus I go into, it's important to know that everything that I have ever shared or outlined is a prelude to that stupendous moment when you've made contact with the soul, and now Shambhala is descending from the upper reaches of the triad down into the soul, which is expanding its parameters exponentially. So thank you. Excellent, Joe. Okay, now we're going to jump to the next animation. But before we begin, I just want to say this is also another animation of the seven rays, or it could be the seven planes, and how they undulate, vibrate, and go through their dance. And there's more than one way to look at the rays, and this is really quite a spectacular animation. And I wish I could say that I did it, and I don't know the artist, but it's fantastic. So use this as a meditation. Thank you. comment here before we enter into our share. We need to sense the raisin planes that are like conical shells. They undulate, they palpitate, they rotate, and they go through these exquisite spiral motions. And if you center your attention on that dot in the very center, that lighted golden white, you can see that continuously emerging as points of flashing light out of the inner sphere. And this is how the rays in the planes actually coming from Fohat, which is the know-nothing, they emerge as points of little points of light, and then they expand their rings past not, which is beautifully represented here, like the blue and the gold, and they create their little sphere of activity and where they will work for a given cycle. Okay, questions? Shares?
Yes, we have a comment from Stefan, and he actually posted it right as you started your video. So he says, may I suggest that when Sufi use their motions and sounds to create a synchronicity among them, similar to schools of fish and flocks of birds and metronomes and meditators bringing their heart rate in sync, would that be part of our evolving soul consciousness and ray magic? Your images are very stimulating.
Absolutely. If these images do not stimulate, let's see, 57 participants sensitive, then I have miserably failed. And if I'm imparting just information, you've all been cheated. Not out of some monetary fee that you paid to get in here, by something far more valuable, which is your time. And the planetary logos, the monad, the soul, they have their own unique rate of vibration or heartbeat. And part of this work is to synchronize your, not just your physical heartbeat, but your etheric heartbeat, your emotional heartbeat, your mental heartbeat in unison with the soul. And then the integrated personality and the fused soul with the one monadic life. And HPB gives the mathematical formulas to her students in some of her esoteric writings that were printed privately and just recently released. And these vibrations, the mathematical formulas are in the billions. So that's what I meant when I made the earlier statement that a lot of this is beyond my pay grade, but definitely that's a beautiful share and comment about the heart. Okay, BL, any additional?
Yeah. Maria says how wonderful it would be for someone to invent a kaleidoscope that would show an intersection with seven rays and the seven planes. Haven't you kind of done that?
The question I ask her, has she ever attended any of the University of the Seven Rays conferences before they went online? Has she ever seen my Lightweaver? Possibly not, because that is exactly what I have done.
She says no, but let me put your Lightweaver website in the chat for everybody.
Yes, and I have constructed this machine that has the rays and the planes, and it rotates at high speed, and lights are reflected off of it. And it gives the observer a multidimensional sense of the rays and the planes connecting, only rather than a flat linear surface, which all of you are viewing, it is multidimensional and it's very evocative. And one day when the right people arrive and the funding is possible, I'm going to duplicate those for people to use creatively. Okay, excellent. Thank you for that question.
And someone then Joe's else? Got her hand up. Go ahead. Go ahead, Joe.
She has Joe? The gremlins in her computer this time around. Rose and I paid our dues last time. Okay, well, we'll go to any additional comments or questions while we're waiting. She's there.
Yeah, awesome. I have to be unmuted every time. Okay, here's what occurred to me, a little experience this morning. I think we are the kaleidoscope. And then let me say that about, I think 25 years ago, I bought a Vogel, some of us will understand, piece of jewelry that was golden and had a particular shape to it. And I wore that continually for, I don't know, a year or two. It just really mesmerized me. Then I went into the jewelry box and I found myself yesterday looking for gold for a color to wear. And pulled it out. Now I see the picture that you are showing us, and it's as if that gold comes up every once in a while. And what I extrapolated from that was that as we ourselves move through levels of awareness, we will again and again be aware of our color consciousness as one of the routes that people are able to use. That from that alone, if that's true, one can extrapolate, an individual meditator can extrapolate that, oh yeah, I'm revisiting this level that I was at, you know, previously at some point in my life. Excellent. Anyway, what do you think of that?
Well, I'm familiar with Marcel Vogel's work with crystals. He operated for quite a while out of the Bay Area, and he was a brilliant scientist before he became interested in the power of crystals. And he used to make them, he used to cut them in his own laboratory at certain angles, and each angle represented some principle or energy or mathematical formula. And this is sort of intense seventh ray work. So, you know, jewelry can be looked upon as just some passing glamour, but jewelry and certain talismans worn with a specific intent in mind can stimulate elementals and devas sort of on the different ray lines. And that's why there's a color for every day of the week. There's a color for every sacred stone and semi-precious stone. And it's same with aromas. All the senses need to be uplifted and refined. It's not like we go from gross consciousness into some nirvanic state. We refine our senses. And a kaleidoscope is a brilliant analogy because we are the living kaleidoscope of the soul. And when we contact it, we realize it's not fixed. It by simply sort of, to create an analogy here, by turning our vision, by turning and tuning our level of observation, this huge kaleidoscope, not only of the soul, and the personality, but the monad, the entire solar system is nothing more than a kaleidoscope or where all these entities are musically creating these compositions, and this beautiful symmetry and mathematics and geometry. So thank you. That was beautiful, Joe. Any additional comments?
That's enough for now. Thank you.
Okay, we do have Rose asks if there's any recordings of the 2015 conference, and I will. I've checked with Michael Crow because I think he might be able to dig into some of the old ones. I haven't heard back from him yet, and then. I think it might be Chris, the name is all messed up, says, reminds me of the Vedic churning of the ocean.
The Vedic turning of the ocean. That's beautiful.
Churning.
Turning.
No, churning, C-H.
Oh, churning, I'm sorry. Churning. Well, the Nirvana has been spoken of as a great sea, an ocean of light and love and beauty, and the Vedas are some of the most ancient poetic and yet scientific descriptions of everything that we study, and in many ways has been stepped down, like the Bhagavad Gita, for the Western mind through Western esotericism. Yes, thank you, the Vedas.
Magda says, I believe that the dot equals Fohat equals pure being can be experienced when all radiatory stages of astral happiness and soul joy and monadic pure bliss stages of the integration are conquered, meaning when fourth initiation is reached through internal and external fires activation in every atom. Father's and mother's breath.
Excellent. Beautiful. Not only occultly accurate, but very poetic. Thank you.
And then
okay.
James, okay, Michael says, yes, he can look to see if we have the 2015 recordings from the conference, it might show that, because that would be so wonderful to be able to show that to everyone. Okay, James gives us a website of Synesth. James, tell me how you say that. Synesthesia? Synesthesia?
Synesthesia.
There you
yes.
go.
At. Yes.
He says it's a mixing of the senses. Thank you.
Well, this is true. If any of you have studied synesthesia, know that we have these distinct senses. But as evolution proceeds, like the rays in the planes, they begin to run into and over each other. And ultimately, there will be only one soul sense, which will include all of the senses as a unity. And there are people who can see colors when they chew their food. There are people who can see geometric forms when they touch things, or when they hear music. And this is not all that uncommon. And most of the really advanced work with synesthesia has been done with women. And I mentioned this in our last presentation, that they've proven that there are women now genetically that have become born with an additional cone in their eye. And it just allows them to see millions of additional hues of colors that those of us who do not have that cone can't see. And we know from our study with wildlife whether it's bees who go by the magnetism or ultraviolet light to find their honey or to find their nest or return to their hive, or other species of the animal kingdom have more refined vision, like cats can see at night. Fascinating study, synesthesia. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. It's quite a tongue twister. Okay. So the one last thing I wanted to make as a comment here.
I just want to add.
Yes, please do.
Sorry. But James says that he's always seen colors when he thinks of a letter or a number.
Awesome. One day we may seek his services to teach us how he does it. Thank you, James. Okay, one last comment on this animation that we just saw. Now, did everyone notice that the earlier animation was definitely very second ray? It was, I think, an ohm or, and, but it was definitely along the second ray line. Now, on this animation, I changed the music to something that I wouldn't say it was entirely first ray, but it was more dynamic. It clipped along at a higher speed. So it's not uncommon when you match and combine certain colors and images in motion with certain types of music, you get different results. Okay, excellent. We're on to the next one. Now, this is a beautiful fractal, and I wish I could say I designed this, but again, I do not know the artist. But when you look at this, you'll notice it's a fractal. You have the parent fractal upper right in the blue with the red center, and as it spirals around through rotary motion and cyclic spiral motion, because these are not just flat or linear, they're actually spherical. They spin out like conical shells from the parent, and then they in turn have offsprings that spin off from them. This is the sort of sine qua non of the comprehension of what DK called the law of correspondence and the law of analogy, where a parent coming from that dark center dot where the red is, it gives birth to these offsprings, and they in turn give birth to other offsprings, but there is always a small dot of fohat at the center of every part of this composition. Granted, it's stronger, more powerful in the very center, the very parent, that we see in the upper right. Every one of these little spin-offs has to have that germ. And Alice Bailey says there's a germ of love via DK in every atom of matter. But this is also true of active intelligence, and it's also true of Fohat. That is the tiny spark that starts this whole thing. And when you get into, you might say, I've just described the outbreath, where all these different levels come into manifestation, each one a little more grounded and a little more earthy than the one before it. That's the great outbreath. And then the in-breath is when all these separate entities have experienced what they were psychically meant to know and understand, are drawn back in. It's the great in-breath. And when they, as they go back in, they fuse each into each other, each level going to a higher and higher one. And eventually they all go back to that center dot that we call, for lack of better words, pralaya, the great sleep, where there is just pure nothingness, whereas the outer expression would be the manvantari, one of the major huge cycles of expression. Okay, so let's take a deep breath, relax, and we'll experience this sort of as an animation. And it's one of my favorite because it has Michael Robbins, one of his favorite musical renditions of, is it Hallelujah? Carrie. Thank you. Okay, excellent. Could you bring that back up, Rose, the previous one? I'm going to make a few quick comments about this. And so what we've just seen is this same identical image, the fractal, only we've superimposed over it a vortex sort of in a spiral motion. And it gives you, to me, a little greater depth of how the rays spiral in and out of incarnation, the rays in the planes, us, the groups with which we work, and even the master's ashrams have their cyclic ebb and flow. So I'm a little behind schedule, so we'll take two or three questions or comments if anybody would like to, and then we'll move on a little bit.
I don't see any. Oh, here we go. Anna says, the rotary and spiral cyclic rays motion produce the forward moving evolution of the consciousness of the planes.
Absolutely. That's an excellent comment, Anna. And in Cosmic Fire, the Tibetan goes into exquisite detail how Ray One is progressive motion, which you might say is the shortest distance between two places. But in another way, it's actually no motion at all. It's pure stillness. But that will require another presentation to go into. Ray two is cyclic, is rotary, excuse me, is cyclic spiral motion, and ray three is rotary motion. So to see something rotating can give you an idea of how the third aspect of deity works. The other two rays work, and that will deserve a special presentation also on its own. So any other comments or questions? Okay. What we now are viewing is the rays and the vortices as seen as the master's ashrams. And there's a beautiful quote, and I can't get it off the top of my tongue, but DK says the ashram is not a bunch of energies just floating around. He says it's a vortex with many energies in motion. So here we have the solar logos, which is a vortex in motion. We have the seven sacred planets, which are all rotating and undergoing this dance that we've outlined here. And then from these seven sacred planets come the ashram of the masters. Now, there are many more masters than what we've sort of designated here, but this gives you an idea. And one of the beautiful things about this chart is that when you look at the solar logoses, plural, and how they circulate around, notice they're all connected by this rainbow. Yes, Uranus, seventh ray violet, Neptune, sixth ray rose, Venus, fifth ray orange, Mercury, fourth ray, et cetera, all the way around. But they are connected. They are not separate organisms. They are all a part of the solar logos. They are the centers in the solar logos, all vibrating, palpitating, going through their dance. And then out of that comes the master's ashrams. And they in turn, and I've shared this before, looking at the very top, thank you, Rose, if you could bring that down because I'm going to share the subplanes. Perfect. You'll notice, and we've shared this before, but this is definitely worth a repeat, that you have in Uranus, Master Rakotzi, or Rakotzi, depending on how you want to verbalize it, he is sort of the master of the seventh ray ashram, working with the Maha Chohen of the third ray at this time as we move into Aquarius. But there's not just one group, one Uranian group. If you look carefully, you'll see there's seven subgroups. And if you want to get very technical, there are seven subgroups of those seven groups. And I apologize for the repetition, but if you're in a particular group of disciples and you have a lot in common, but then all of a sudden there are strong variations in how reality is or how things should be, it's often because they may be in the 7-3 group and you into the 7-4. So their seventh ray would be expressed more articulately through the third ray, active intelligence, through mental forms. But if you're 7-4, you may have that same powerful seventh ray influence, but you may gravitate towards the arts, culture, civilization, all the things that we know that go with the seven rays. Okay, good. So let's go to part two, and we may not finish this, but we'll get partially through it. And what we're going to do is take sort of everything that we've outlined, which is primarily macrocosmic, and now we're going to apply it to the microcosm. So we're going to get into the science of triangles here, and we've shown this image, but it's important to recognize that the image on the left are all vortices. All of the triangles between these centers are vortices. And it's all right to use these fixed discs because it is entirely occultly accurate, but it's more of a fifth ray presentation. And much of what you're experiencing here is a fifth ray foundation, but overlaid with the fourth ray. But I don't mean fourth ray is just art. I mean fourth ray as an avenue of entry into the intuition. And somebody brought that out earlier. The fourth ray, you cannot fully understand the fourth ray until the fourth initiation. And that is a beautiful place, no doubt, to be. Okay, so on the right, there are electrical potentialities. Yes. This is the next image. So what I've done here is what I did with the rays in the planes in an earlier image. Now you're looking at the centers, which are made up of the rays and planes. Remember how we saw the rays and the planes overlapping, creating this beautiful latticework of look like petals, but then they disappear into this amorphous rotating mass of energy? Well, you're looking at a representation of every center, again, in a fixed form, but it is in motion. And the triangles that have to be activated between these centers for the disciple to pass through the initiatory experience is demonstrated here. First initiation, sort of on the masculine side, ulna major, throat, sacral, and on the left side, and then on the right, you have the feminine initiations, ajna, heart, solar plexus. Okay, so at the first initiation, sacral energy elevated to the throat, brought down to the base of the spine, then elevated again to the sacral center, up to the throat, is how this is initially launched. And people undergoing the first initiation are working on this triangle, and they may not be conscious of it. In other words, you don't have to know the technicalities of the occult path to be able to experience it. But if you have a more scientific bent, this isolated minutia is part of a greater mosaic that's really quite creative. Okay, what happens when the energy circulates between the sacral center, the throat, and the base of the spine? Elementals, tiny lives that are involutionary, that are trapped down in your sexual center, are finally liberated by being drawn up to the throat. And paradoxically, this is how the throat center becomes stimulated, not simply because it's a higher organ, but because now it's being fed by the sacral center. Doesn't mean you have to be celibate. Doesn't mean that you can't express yourself sexually. It just means it's not dominating you. Okay, second initiation, and I'm going to go through this quickly. It's the solar plexus to the heart, to the base of the spine, solar plexus to the heart, base of the spine. And when that triangle, energy is passing around that triangle faster and faster, it becomes a vortex. So here you have the centers are vortexes, the triangles are also vortexes. So We will come back to this many times, but always from a slightly different point of view. Let's jump to the next slide. Now, all these centers and all these triangles have to be grounded, and they are grounded in the etheric body. And then eventually from the etheric body, they're grounded in what is called the nadis. And then from the nadis, they are eventually grounded into what is called an acupuncture, the meridians. And I apologize if there are esoteric healers here because I'm sort of oversimplifying, but it's nevertheless true. And there are all these electrical channels that must be opened when they have too much energy going through them, or strengthened when there's not enough energy going through them. And we will return to this chart in future commentaries. Okay, so let's jump to the next one. Now, this is going to be a short meditation, and this is a wonderful animation of the etheric body and how it distributes in constant motion this prana, chi, that you absorb from the sun, from the planet, from the people around you, and the higher subplane, from the soul itself, the integrated personality. And just visualize yourself breathing in, having this circulate through your physical etheric body, and as you breathe out, discharge any unwanted discomfort, illness, or disease that you are dealing with at this time, because this is a very short but very powerful meditation. Thank you. Okay, excellent. Just a quick comment before we take any questions. The etheric body is normally identified with gold and yellow and orange, prana from the sun, but in the physical etheric pranic constitution of humanity, it's more violet. But all of the seven colors of the spectrum can be found in the etheric body. It's just those are usually considered the two predominant ones. And as you evolve, the violet becomes more rarefied and ultimately becomes what DK calls translucent lavender. Okay, great. Any comments or questions?
Yes, we have a couple of comments. Magda, and she typed this right before you started your presentation on the etheric there. She said, so it probably relates to the previous discussions. It says, could we speculate that when the dot is black, we are in the pralaya phase, and when the dot is white, light, nirvana, Vedic ocean, we are in the manifestation phase?
Absolutely. That's a beautiful way to share that truth. Excellent.
And then Anna says, interaction of the latent and pranic energies, it's that breathing.
Yes. One of the most important sciences in Raja Yoga is the science of the breath. And without getting into a big to-do, when the individual breath of the human being through concentration and right interior focus is strong enough, the individual breath begins to merge with the group breath, the soul's breath, and the breath of the hierarchy, because there is a breath, just as there is a heartbeat. Yes, tremendously advanced and evolved from what we're familiar with, but definitely real. And that's one of the keys to initiation, is the ability to, without forcing, using the right and proper breathing exercise for where you are on the path. And that's what a senior disciple in the group or the master can share or dispense, because they know, to step back a few of our shares here, they know what centers are activated or which triangles are now in the process of being affected. Okay, great. Excellent. So we're going to go.
See
go
any
ahead.
Other comments at this? Okay. I'm sorry, I was just going to say, I don't see any other comments at this time.
You can skip this, Rose. We'll just go right to this next one. Is this the correct time, Rose, or is this the correct time? Okay, thank you. Excellent. Okay, we're going to skip. Okay, no, here we go. What you're about to see is an animation put together by a group of scientists that are pretty mainstream. And what it is, it's their take or their research on the different life streams of the human condition. In other words, we're not all simply evolved from Neanderthal man. There were many experiments by the hierarchy who sent these waves of sacrificial egos to the planet Earth millions of years ago that overshadowed animal men and women. And we're not going to go into that too extensively, other than say, as these overshadowing Venusian saviors affected the physical etheric body, the body changed. The body became more refined, more elevated. The senses became more aware of its environment. And again, this is an oversimplification, but it is nevertheless visually accurate in certain ways about the monad working through the soul, working through the integrated personality that goes back 25 million years. And science has no idea how far back this goes, and the different life forms that have come forward, maybe failed, and then the hierarchy sent another overshadowing group of saving angels. And here we are today. And what a glorious thing it is. So here we go. 90 seconds of shaping humanity, starting from the beginning. For all of the historical flaws, excuse me, of this animation, it still conveys a sense of the timeless and the beauty of the evolutionary process. Now, granted, it's not just the evolution of form that we're most concerned with, it's the evolution of the emotions, the mind, and ultimately the evolution of the soul itself, which, according to the ageless wisdom, was borrowed. And even though we say it's disintegrated at the fourth initiation, starts at the third, culminates fully at the fourth, there are others who say that that's only part of the story, that the angel that sacrificially gave its life to be an intermediary between us and the monad now can go back to its evolution. It played its part. And this all falls under the law of sacrifice, of the greater overshadowing the lesser. And the sheer beauty of where we're at right now, and it's just can take your breath away if you can just touch that stream of evolution that is not just going back in time, but where we're going in the future. Okay, any comments or questions?
Joe asks, will we be returning to some of these depictions for deepening understanding? thinking particularly of the slide you said MDR loved the music. It
Oh,
seemed to
absolutely.
emphasize to me the life and matter and the solar plexus, probably prana and the splenic center eventually. And I just want to say, Duane, I will post these video clips that you have along with the recording so people can just look at those.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
And Asha says, thank you for another brilliant webinar. I'm almost moved to tears. And she says, where can we get the replay, please? These webinars are on Makara. Give me a minute and I'll put the link in there.
Excellent.
Chris says, recently scientists were able to turn tadpoles into salamanders by exposing their, thank you, Michael. Michael put the link in for the Makara webinars. Okay, Chris, recently scientists were able to, okay, I can't stop the people so I can read, okay?
Go ahead.
You can scroll up and recently, it'll stop it. You scroll up just a little
recently,
bit.
Recently, scientists were able to turn tadpoles into salamanders by exposing them to a specific frequency, thereby illustrating the effect of tone and sound altered DNA.
Excellent. DK says that the age of Aquarius will be characterized more by one thing than anything else, and that is the creative use of sound. Not only in deep meditation, as we have referred to here, but also creating soundless vehicles that travel through the air, medicine, all kinds of technology. And sound is so important. And let me say this before we conclude with one last video. And that is that NASA and cosmologists, physicists, and other scientific areas of research have proven that our sun is genetically putting out energies that they did not detect in earlier experiments and research. And that our sun, understanding there's three levels to our sun, but the most dense, the pranic, as a part of our natural evolution, would be attempting to bring up us genetically to a more optimal level, changing the very chromosomes in our genetic makeup. So that's a very, very, and we're going to explore that astrologically. There's going to be a couple of sessions where we get into what these outer constellations are doing, the sacred planets, and how it's affecting the planet and all of humanity within it. And one last statement, you know, we know the ecosystem is changing and that we have everything shifting through our ecosystem that's out of balance. Well, humanity is partially responsible for that, but also it's the responsibility of the solar logos working through the seven, well, working through all the planetary logoi to increase the radiatory level. And we're going to get into all of ultraviolet light and how it's affecting us in the future. Okay, excellent. Fabulous. And thank you so much for yes.
I'm sorry, I just want to say that you have a number of comments on how beautiful your series is here. Maria says, so grateful to have this expansion of the view. Otherwise, I fall into the flatness of my current perspective. Stefan, and I'm sorry if I murder this, says, ich bin ein Glückenklicker. He's going to have to explain that in English, or I'm going to need Google Translate. And Suzanne says, absolutely riveting presentation, surely a gateway into the coming way of the continued expanded rediscovering the truth.
Excellent. and I appreciate everyone in their presence. All group work is made up of every individual, and we delegate responsibility here or there to one or two or several people, but we are the group. We are the combined focused energy that gives these images and these words of wisdom by the Tibetan their power and their potency. So let us close with the next animation, and thank you all so much. I send my light and my love, and we will meet again. We seem to be having a small technical difficulty here, and I thank the powers of the universe for making it the last image and not the first one. Here we go. Rose to the rescue. Well, unlike, there we go.
Tatsavitu vareiniyam Bargo devasya limahi Yuyona prachodaya Om Bhurbhu Vasva Savitu vareiniyam Bargo devasya dimai Diyo yona prachodaya Om Bhurbhu Vasvaha Tat Savitu vareiniyam Bargo devasya dimai Diyo yona prachodaya Om Bhurbhu Vasvaha Tat Savitru Vareiniyam Bargo Devasya Dhimahi Diyo yona prachodaya Om Bhurbhu Vasvaha Savitru vareniyam Bargo devasya dhimahi Diyo yona prachodaya Vareniyam Bargo Devasya Dhimahi
Michael has put the information on where you can find the webinar, when the next webinar is, and everything there on in the comments. And we'll also have the announcements go out as usual every month. So thank you, Duane. You have a lot of thank yous in the chat.
And I can send the chat notes out to Duane and post them too, as you want. I just usually just edit them some and then make sure that the main statements are in them.
Okay, would you like to do that then and send it to me and I'll get it all posted.
Okay.
So, all right, thank you everybody.
And the other thing
thank
is
you,
Duane,
especially Duane
and Rose, if you want to send the etheric video, because that's way better audio than what I added to it. It's perfect. You could send that video with the audio.
Okay, Rose says okay.
Grazie. Grazie, grazie. Live. Big love.
Thank you, everybody. Goodbye.